Good morning. Welcome to the FTS bet slip on Wednesday, the 27th of May. We got Chrissy Spreadsheets on today. Chrissy Spreadsheets interview. Chris isn't a better. He's been a fantastic help to me just through doing projects for me and building me sheets for modelling and getting data processed and analysed quickly. Really interesting chat. Lovely guy, Chrissy. Really nice guy. So hopefully you guys enjoy that. And if you follow on Twitter, he's in one of my sheets, he built himself a little bet slip generator that basically looks at the data and throws out bets of the day. And I think he's on a run of about 12 out of 12. So going well as well. I'll get the results up now. Football's back. Perhaps we'll give it through June and do the end of the month. 8 games in Germany yesterday. No home wins. Not very good. Leverkusen did surprise me, getting absolutely pasted. Gladbach didn't really do much in the last third. And I watched some of the Dortmund Bayern Munich game. Dortmund played well, didn't really create a clear-cut chance and take anything. And the finish from the Munich guy was fantastic. I didn't watch much of the second half. I am struggling with that no crowd football. I find it extremely dull to watch. But on to today. Yes, on to today. Again, Germany only. We have got other leagues coming back. Again, not a massive amount, but I have got one mention if people are interested. Over 2.5 in Bochum versus Holstein Kiel. So 5:30 in the Bundesliga 2, trading over 2.5 Bochum versus Holstein Kiel. You may want to drip that in through the sort of first 10 or 15 minutes of the match and do that. I've got nothing else really. The coming saga rolls on. I love the... Even me, I get abuse from people saying that I've got no motive whatsoever. I think they are taking the absolute piss out of us. That's my motive. I think we are. I do not like people taking the piss. And if you watch Michael Gove yesterday on LBC, when he was asked, "Do you get in the car and go for a drive to test your eyesight?" And then he actually answered, "Yes." These people are just absolutely ripping the shit out of us. You know, there's people dying and they're ripping the shit out of us. It's nothing for me to do with anything other than they have nothing but contempt for us. And not you guys, because I know some of you agree with me, but a lot of people just can't see it because they're so blinded by their political affiliation or their Brexit affiliation. And I don't doubt that there's people who want Cummings out, as I've said, for being an architect of leave, but this is nothing to do with that for me. I just think they are absolutely lying to our faces and they're doing it almost smirking with a smile on their face and taking the piss out of us. And I don't know how in any way that is good governance. I just find it pathetic and that's the road we've gone down. And I can't see it reversing. That's the sad thing. I think that politics is going to be like this and we're going to be governed like this for a long time, with people just doing what the fuck they want and fuck you lot. They just don't care. And if you think they do, you take some convincing of me. And then you see that black guy in America. I said racism on the rise. I know it's gone on long before this, but Trump is legitimising these sort of things. And absolutely tragic, isn't it, that black guy, they police officer knelt on his neck for 7 minutes or something and the guy died. And then you sort of see that the guy on Facebook is an absolute racist, the policeman. You know, it's just like racism in a uniform, isn't it? Absolute heartbreaking. I mean, it's just disgraceful. It really is. That woman in Central Park the other day phoning up saying an African American's attacking her or going to attack, she's in fear of her life, when all he'd asked is to put her leash on the dog. The fucking world's going mad. I can't abide racism. I just find it disgusting that people think they're better than somebody else because the colour of their skin, I find it. And you got wankers like Trump sort of bringing it home. And, you know, in this country, we've got Farage as an absolute racist and Johnson. Anyway, enough of all that. Let's get to Chrissy. So yeah, spoke to Chrissy for a sort of about 45-50 minutes. Hopefully you enjoy it. As I say, cracking guy. I wanted to know a bit about his background and how he got into what he did. Yeah, here's the interview with Chris, and then I'll just be back at the end to sign off. Right, morning. This morning, I am extremely privileged and excited to have Chrissy Spreadsheets with us. Good morning, Chrissy.
Good morning, Ian. How are you?
I'm great, and I want to thank you for doing this more than anything. I mean, obviously, we've had FTS punters and things on, but to have somebody who I'm going to say this, and this will be the only time, I respect for what they do, and isn't really connected with betting, but has been a great help to me. I really appreciate you coming on.
Cheers, mate. Well, yeah, I'm looking forward to it. And I've got to say, I've just listened to yesterday's podcast. And yeah, that was, you really got stuck into a couple of issues. Then you're talking to me straight away. So approaching this with a bit of trepidation, but we'll see how we go.
I think you don't need to worry. Everyone knows you're an umpty, so you don't need to worry.
Honestly, here we go.
I'm looking at him. We've done the Skype and I can see him. And he shaved his head a while back. I've got to go into this. We had a video tutorial about, I don't know, a month, 6 weeks ago into this lockdown now. And he turned up with a New York Jets hat on. And I said, what's the New York Jets hat for? He said, oh, my hair's a mess. It's not customer ready. I said, I don't care, mate. I said, you look more ridiculous in the hat. So the next time I saw him, then he's got the hair and he's got like flipping Chewbacca hair all over him. So I said to him, just shave it off. Just shave your hair off. It's hot. You're at home. Nobody's going to see you. Don't worry about it. So he shaved his hair off. Looks fine. Looked absolutely fine. But he has clearly been on some sort of weight loss regime now. He looks like someone out of Merry Christmas, Mr. Lawrence, like he's been in a POW camp for about the last 12 weeks. I can't believe it.
Yeah, you've been working me too hard, mate. I've told you.
You look very healthy, son. Very healthy. Right, well, I want to talk to with the guys first, because I've never really discussed this with you. I mean, I think it's fair to say we've become reasonable mates over meeting through a sort of professional relationship and me doubting that you could do anything.
And yeah, since the famous Nottingham meeting, the Hooters meeting.
You've proven me wrong at every stage. But what I've never really, I think the thing that sort of bamboozled me at the start was somebody telling me there's a guy who's an expert in Excel. I'm not going to talk about what you charge, but charge is a fair amount of money to do a job.
I think you've spoken about that on the pod before.
Yeah, and I thought such a thing really exist. And I will say, and I mean this hand on heart, and I will probably repeat it, the work you do is exceptional. It is unbelievable. And I mean, you never fail to amaze me when I ask you to do something with what comes back. You know, the football streak stuff, it just works so quickly. The racing last week you sent me, it's fan. But how did you get into it? You're obviously an educated guy. You went to university. How did you then get into doing Excel?
Well, it depends on what version of the story you want, but I'll go way back to the start. So let's go back to 2008, this would have been. So you remember the financial crash, 2008. So I was actually working in Tokyo. So I did 4 years at uni, did a degree in French and history. Then I went to Japan for 4 years, worked for a public relations company out there. And in 2008, just when this financial crash was kicking off, that company was falling apart basically because they had clients in the technology sector and it was, yeah, really badly hit. So I wanted to kind of get back to the UK and I wanted to actually, you know what I felt like? I'll put it in Erskinean terms. I felt like I was just bullshitting people in my job. I was working in public relations. I was doing kind of market analysis for people who wanted to get into the Japan market, for tech companies who wanted to get into the Japan market. And I was doing okay, but I didn't feel like I had solid kind of analytical skills. You know, I was like explaining things to people, but I wanted to actually have some proper numerical analytical skills to kind of sit alongside that just to give me more confidence, like professionally, really.
Yeah.
So that led to this master's, and the master's was in business analysis. You know, I was just looking through, I was in my office in Tokyo thinking, this company's going down the pan. I best make a plan quickly. So I started looking through master's courses, looked at one from my old uni, which is up in, well, down in Warwick. Well, up in Warwick for you, yeah. Down in Warwick for us Middle Earthers. And yeah, I was, and they're offering a course in business analytics. So I came back to the UK. I went and met the guy who ran the course, and he said to me, "No, you can't do this because you need a maths background to do it." And my degree was in history and French, and I'm an art student. And he said to me, "But listen, we've got this marketing masters that you'd absolutely love." And I was like, "No. I've had enough of the bullshit. I want some proper skills." And he said, I don't know if we can let you on this course, but you know, because I'm kind of impressed with your attitude, you know, I went to see him, went to have a meeting with him. He's like, "We'll let you on this course and we'll kind of see how you do. And then maybe you could maybe transfer over to an easier course," basically. Yeah. And so I started the masters. This was 2008, 2009. And I was pretty rubbish, close to the bottom of the class, but, I don't know. I just ground it out. And you know, when sometimes it's like when you know you're really the bottom of the class, you really focus on kind of how you're learning things, and you really learn things at a very deep level. And that's what it was like with Excel. You know, everybody in this class was knocking out these Excel sheets because it was a master's in business analytics. So it's basically a master's in spreadsheets. And people were just doing this modeling, data analysis. And I was literally standing behind them watching them like, "My goodness, this is ridiculous." And then I remember, you've got to tell me if I'm going on, by the way.
I remember
remember Christmas Eve 2000. Yeah, go on.
I find it fascinating.
Okay. Christmas Eve, this was. So Christmas Eve 2008. So my family go to this Chinese restaurant on Christmas Eve. It's a bit of a family tradition. And I distinctly remember getting back from this Chinese restaurant and had some coursework to do, you know, with Excel. And I was like, "I'm really struggling with this master's." And I got this spreadsheet open. And I thought, right, too many times I've just accepted not understanding it. So I'm not going to go to bed. This was Christmas Eve. I'm not going to go to bed until I've understood one thing in this spreadsheet. And then I'm going to build from there. And that one thing in VBA, and I know some of your listeners have done like the 30 for 30 course and stuff. That one thing was the offset command in VBA, which is to do with position control. So if you want to put things in different columns and stuff like that. And I just went to bed that night. I was like, "Shit, I've just understood a little bit. And then, but what was actually going on was I was learning. I always talk about meta skills. Yeah, people think I've got to learn offset. I've got to learn pivot tables. You've got to learn how to learn in Excel. So, and people who've done my VBA course will understand what I'm talking about. But I learned how to work things out. So this VBA, how is it working? And in Excel, you've got to step through the code. You've got to have both the windows open. So I was developing this meta skill of learning how to learn, which just served me in really good stead. And so for the rest of the course, you know, I started doing better. And then what I found was the focus started moving away from the technical stuff and my soft skills that I developed professionally doing things like client liaison and stuff, suddenly they were coming into play because I was just beginning to compete with the proper data geeks who've all got, you know, maths and stats degrees, but like they couldn't present anything, you know, they couldn't write reports and there's no way they could go out and get a customer either. Yeah. Particularly someone like yourself, can you imagine? So it's funny. And but it all kind of came together. But I'm obsessed with this idea of having weird edges. Yeah. And you've alluded to this in your podcast, but I give the example of, and I don't want your audience to think bloody hell he thinks he's Steve Jobs, but I give the example of Steve Jobs, who's obviously the guy who created Apple. Yeah. And he said, so when he went to uni, he didn't do one program. He was just like the ultimate hippie. He just went around different classes, literally sitting in the back of the class, like soaking up some ideas. One of the classes he did, bear in mind he was a computer programmer basically, but one of the classes he did was in calligraphy, so ornate letter writing. And then, you know, fast forward 50 years or so, 30, 40 years, then what do we associate with Mac? Well, it's the beautiful interface you get with Mac. And specifically what Steve Jobs designed was, I'm pretty sure I'm right, I hope there's no experts listening, but, you know, if you think of letters displaying on a computer screen, so before then, the computer allocated equal space to each letter, yeah?
Right.
Yeah. But if you think how letters should display on a computer screen, so like the letter L should have less space than the letter M, shouldn't it? Because it takes up less space. So and Steve Jobs said he got this idea from his calligraphy class. Yeah. So it's funny how these weird combinations of skills can give you edges in certain professions, and just through luck, not by design, through luck and bloody mindedness, like refusing, like I'm just the worst loser in the world. You think I'm a nice, makes me laugh, you think I'm a nice guy. Like if you go and speak to the people I play cricket with, they're like, he's the biggest C-U-N-T on the field, you know. I just hate losing. And so that combination of kind of bloody mindedness and a willingness to engage in new stuff, that led to this skill set I've got that's worked out really well for me. But it wasn't by design. It was just by a refusal, really, to give up. And as I said, a willingness to kind of learn new stuff. So that's my story. And I'm sure everybody's switched off now. We're about 25 minutes into the podcast. Oh, but anyway.
Fascinating. So how did you, from that, though, how did you then come to start the company? I mean, I find it amazing, honestly. I don't live in the real world. I sit at home betting on football matches. So I love hearing people talk about stuff like this. So.
Yeah, yeah. Well, I'll tell you what was happening. So if we rewind back to Tokyo, so the company laid me off. And I basically had 2 months in Tokyo because I had 2 months before I was starting this master's. And I actually, to my shame, I actually claimed unemployment benefit for 2 months.
Oh, he's one of them.
In Tokyo, which was like 500 or 600 quid a month. I was like, God, I'm going to do it. The funny thing is, it's just in Japan, it's really easy to do. Like, anyway, let's not get into that. But so I had 2 months to kill. And you know what I did? I watched The Apprentice, right? The Apprentice had just come out. And I think the first two series have come out. And this is like in the early days of binge watching. They're on YouTube. I just discovered it for the first time. And I was like, bear in mind, I had been out of the UK cultural environment for 4 or 5 years. I was like, shit, they have programs like this on TV now. This is incredible. And obviously it's all about, you know, I'm not saying that's a good representation of business or how you should be in business. In fact, I'd say the opposite. But it got me thinking about, for want of a better term, entrepreneurship, about setting up companies. And this company I work for in Tokyo only had 6 or 7 people in as well. So you get to see all the functions of the business, you know, business development, meeting customers, delivering the service all the way through to invoicing. So it gave me a sense of, like wanting to do that myself. And, you know, I've had all kinds of privileges in my life. And one of the privileges is I've got incredibly supportive parents. And they said to me, after the masters, they said, listen, why don't you try? Well, that's not quite true. I said to them, I want to try. And they said, well, just live here for 6 months. And my mum said to me, listen, if you can't pay for rent after 6 months, if you can't go move into a flat in Nottingham after 6 months, then you've got to go and get a full-time job. And just before 6 months, like it was so kind of last minute what happens. I got this project with a college in Nottingham, and they wanted to build a student tracking system in Excel. I knew somebody in the college who was kind of a bit like you, was just really impressed with what Excel can actually do. And she set me up with this project, and I worked with them for about 2 or 3 years. And this was like 2010 to 2012, really early days of the business. And that sustained me through the early days. And when I was getting it started, I was like, I still have this metric in my head now. It's like, how long can I live? how long can I live based on work I'm currently doing? And these days it's more relaxed. But back then I was like, amazing, I can live for 3 months on my own based on money coming into the company. And gradually that was like 3 months, 6 months. And now I'm lucky. I don't really think about it.
And then basically all that ended and you met me and I paid your fucking rent for the last 10 years or whatever it is. That's basically what you're saying, isn't it? The college in Nottingham kept you over till you met me. And then it's just, here you go, Ian, I've built you this, I've built you that. Just give me, you bought a new house, didn't you?
Yeah, a couple of years ago. So we moved out to...
Just give me the mortgage details. I might as well just shove it straight in there.
I can put you in touch with the bank manager,
Back for you. amazing. And how did you pick the name? Because it's a shit name.
I agree. I wish there was like an origin story or something, but there isn't. So when I got it started, I started it with a friend on the master's course, who's still a good mate of mine. I was speaking to him the other day, but he moved out of the business after about a year or so. And he just liked this idea of tigers. So we started with, it's a great lesson in how not to set up a business, really. Like we're called Tiger Solutions. Yeah. And, people are just like, what the hell? Like, what do you do? Like Tiger Solutions, So already we were kind of handicapping ourselves because we like, just when you're shaking someone's hand, you're kind of panicking to explain what we were doing. And then we weren't just doing spreadsheets. We were doing like a range of business analytics tools. But over time, one thing we did right was we went and spoke to loads of people and we just like going around speaking, networking events and stuff. But gradually we learned from the market, people wanted spreadsheets. Everybody was having problems with spreadsheets. So that led to Tiger Spreadsheet Solutions. There's actually a load of other sub brands like Tiger something solutions, that I just binned. Because it was all about spreadsheets. So that's the direction we went.
You're not thinking of rebranding it like FTS Spreadsheet Solutions or something. Get a proper name on it.
I was thinking of starting Chrissy Spreadsheets Limited.
Yeah, you were loving it when I was having my Tiger Roland Tiger Woods traumas. You were loving the publicity I'm giving you. A serious question. I spoke to Kev this morning. I met you through Kev.
Yep.
And it just so happened that Kev and I, we just had a catch up this morning because he's obviously in the lockdown. And one of the reasons that Kev stopped with me was he's got two autistic kids. So we had an hour chatting this morning. He's had a dreadful time. But one of the things we actually discussed was Excel with a view to, he asked me a question, which I couldn't really answer. He said, do I think that Excel is still the way forward for what I do, or will it move more to, and I know nothing of this stuff, Chris, I didn't know about Excel, SQL databases and online. My view is, I'm a bit of a dinosaur, as I've said on the podcast today. I tend to do things the same way, and you saw how resistant I was when I met you to, this can't be done like that. And Excel has opened my eyes, amazing what you can do. So I think what I said to him was, I will always use Excel. I can't see that I won't, because I'm used to it and I know how it works and how I work and it suits me. But do you think with technology moving, is Excel on its way out? Is it something that's going to be replaced with?
I think it's a very complex discussion. And obviously I've got to declare my interest in it, which is obvious. But the difference between talking to me and talking to any number of people who are presenting what is advertising, presenting it as serious analysis. The difference with me is I'll tell you what the weaknesses are about Excel. Whereas with the other stuff, if you're talking SQL, if you're talking any kind of analytical platform, whether it's R or one of these big data set platforms, you always have pros and cons with any platform. There is no panacea. And you always read on LinkedIn or even on Facebook and stuff, it's like new white paper, new Excel killer has come out, and people are often advertising something else. So this can lead to this conception over time that Excel is not there is not appropriate for the job. But there's only two reasons not to use Excel. One is your data set is too large. So I say 300,000 to 400,000 rows or more, then that's going to get problematic. So I think we feel it in some of our projects. Yeah. But you tend to manage your projects on kind of rolling 3-year parameters. So that lends itself to Excel. The other reason you shouldn't be using Excel, and this is something that SQL would possibly solve, is that you have multiple people in remote locations trying to access the same file, because Excel Online doesn't support VBA, although they're talking about possibly bringing another language in to support it. So they're at the end of the day, they're the two reasons. And I say this to all of my customers, if you've got more than 500,000 rows, then at the moment, Excel's not for you. If you want to do a lot of remote working, lots of people say, you know, this person in this location, this person in that location, they've got to update the file at the same time. I would say to them, okay, you don't want to use Excel. So if you can tick those two boxes, then you get into the benefits of Excel. And okay, how long have you got benefits of Excel? But
so from your point of view, you don't see it as a threat to your business going forward. Obviously, you've built up a great name for what you do. I would, you know, I had somebody ring me, didn't I, from a finance company, asking me about you. He said, I want some work done.
Yeah.
You know, you've given Chrissy some work. What's he like? And I said, he's absolutely brilliant. You've built up a name. You do a fantastic job. I hate saying it to you, but you do. But you don't see it as a threat, you know, like in 10 years time, or, you know, this isn't going to exist anymore. My business is.
Well, I mean, the way I view it is the answer. I mean, sorry to sound like cheesy business speak, but the answer is always in the big picture. The answer is not in the detail. The big picture is you've got an industry where Microsoft has the monopoly in productivity software. Okay, so Microsoft has these huge contracts with big companies to provide Office. So it would be dependent on Microsoft no longer providing Excel as part of Office. Yeah. So that's one thing. For everybody moving away from Excel, and people, you've got to remember, it's in the interest of some people to create a perception that everyone's moving away from Excel. But for every company that moves onto another platform, they're still doing some work in Excel, and or they're kicking reports out into Excel. That's one thing. But at the other end of the funnel, you've got customers coming in. So customers in developing countries, say, that are kind of outside of our kind of day-to-day perception of what's going on. You've got people, you know, downloaded Excel for the first time. And a bit like, you know, when I first met you, you know, just playing with VBA for the first time. Yeah. So, you know, I'm very suspicious of kind of group think. And, you know, well, you've been very kind to me. I'll be kind to you. You know, I've got a lot of respect for your mindset of questioning everything. So I'd say to you, if people are moving away from Excel, you know, show me the evidence. Show me the usage statistics. Show me this piece of software that is the panacea, that does everything that Excel does, that has the transparency that you value in Excel so that you can do the checking yourself. If it does all that and it avoids some of the annoying errors that Excel gives, yeah, I'm ready to go. I'm ready to rock and roll. And with my business, I would say there's, you know, it's sensible in any business to not be too exposed to any particular risk. And we're saying that Excel becoming obsolete might be a risk. You know, I personally don't think it is, but I do other things in the business. You know, I do content. I'd like to move the business towards producing content really for people. So, you know, I gave you the podcast idea. I always claim that one, producing videos. Yeah. And I teach as well. I teach at Warwick now, which is where I did the masters. And I only teach about one day a week, but they'd be keen on doing more. So I've got my fingers in a few different pies there. But I'd say to your audience, they hear it every day from you, evaluate things by finding the facts yourself. Excel's got pros and cons. SQL has pros and cons. any other platform has pros and cons. If you go and evaluate the pros and cons, get all the right advice from impartial people, you know, then you're in the best place to make your decision.
Yeah, I mean, I do get people say to me, why do you still use Excel, you old dinosaur? And I say, well, one, it works for me.
But the other thing about, can I just say one thing on Excel, before, and then we'll definitely go on.
Yeah.
But people are using, like, they're just using tiny margins of what's possible.
Yeah, that's
in
right.
Excel. Yeah, yeah. You know, you're one of the tiny minority of people who's actually getting value out of Excel by using, you know, we're only using a subset of the functionality, but you're using it properly. Yeah. And that doesn't mean VBA. People are like, oh, I've got to learn VBA. It doesn't. It means, you know, learning the formulae properly, but not having this kind of piecemeal transactional attitude to learning. You've got to commit long term, 30 for 30 at least, commit long term to learning Excel. And you know the 30 for 30 course. There's two or three of your guys followed it, and perhaps if they're listening, they'll leave comments below. I'm not going to pick anybody out with names or anything, but they're like, this hasn't just made things easier. This has transformed the way of working.
I've just to let people know, you did 30 for 30 when lockdown started, which I think you did 30 days straight. I'm not sure whether you don't know whether you did have a break at all, but you did sort of
straight through.
Yeah, a half hour sort of live YouTube presentation where you talk people through all elements. I've had nothing but fantastic, you know, I watched some of them, just laughed. I never really fitted in with my time. I wanted to come in there and cause some trouble.
Yeah, but I was always looking out for you, ready with the block button.
But they, but yeah, the guys who've contacted me are all brilliant. I mean, one guy in particular has gone full steam into it, absolute full, to the extent he's checking my data and sending me things. Do you want to check this, that, and the other? Absolutely fantastic. I'm going to give you a little thing here. You went to Warwick University.
Yes, I did. Yeah.
I got offered a place at Warwick University.
Oh, I was going to say we could have met earlier, but I wasn't there in 1965.
You fucking absolute bend. See what I mean?
So where did you go? Uni.
I did my A levels in a college called Brooklands. I did law, maths, PE, and economics, or sports studies. It was the first year ever they offered sports studies as an A level. I applied to St Andrews, Warwick, can't remember where else, and I wanted to do law and sociology. You could do like a split degree and then you chose what line you wanted to do. I got offered a place at Warwick to do law and sociology. But that was at the time, as I was going into my A levels, my old man went inside and it all sort of went to shit, and I just knew I knew that if I went, I mean, it was back in the days of grants and stuff like that, that I would get given whatever it is, $1,000 at the start of term, and I'd be in the student bar getting hammered. And it wouldn't do anything for me because I just wasn't in a good place at the time. I regret it now. You know, you do. Particularly when my boy went off to Cambridge and I've said I wanted to see him have a good time. He spoke to me about it. I said, it is the one regret I've got that I didn't go to you. But I just wasn't in the right place. You know, I know I'd have just gone in the bar and got absolutely pissed up every night. That's what I'd have done. I wasn't in a great place. But yeah, there you go. You see, Warwick, see, I'm tied to everybody I speak to on this podcast. I find a way to tie myself to them. So I'm going to say that I don't think I am probably your normal customer.
Can we talk about the time we first met?
You can be as honest as you like. Yes.
It was great. So Cav called me. I just got a call. So this is 2016. Got a call. I was like, this guy sounds switched on. Sounds like he knows what he wants. Sounds like a good dude. So great. I'll go down and see him. So I went and met Cav and sat down. We sat down in a little restaurant in St. Pancras, it would have been, St. Pancras Station, you know, on the upper floor. I don't know if it's King's Cross or St. Pancras. And we were going through this Excel stuff. And it was a good meet. It was kind of a high pressure meeting. you know, because he was like, okay, show me this. And how does this, you know, he was testing me out. Which, you know, I'll do exactly the same in his situation. But then he was like, yeah, we might go and see Ian later. And I was like, who is this guy? I was like, is this some kind of gangster movie? I've got to kind of work through the levels to get to the top boss. So I had about an hour getting checked out by Cav. I think Cav's a top man, by the way. And obviously I'm grateful to Cav for getting us together and stuff. And we did some good work together as well. And I got to witness some of the exchanges between you and him, which was great. So then he was like, so then stood up with Cav and I thought that was it. But then he was like, yeah, we're going to go meet Ian now. And I was like, what the hell? And then we just went to this pub. Met yourself, got a pint in. I think that's the first ever client meeting that we had a couple of pints of ale. but we had a couple of pints there, and then you were chatting away, I remember thinking you're a very shrewd guy. I thought both of you were very shrewd guys, and you know, willing to explore the possibilities, but you're not going to be conned or no sales chatter, none of that shit.
Yeah.
Which is right on my street, really. What I do remember about it is so we went through some stuff and I said, yeah, it's possible with VBA, it's possible. Let's do a little bit of work to try it out. But we didn't talk about money at all. And then literally when we were standing up, we were standing up, you were like, how much does it cost? I just said, yes, well, you've said before it's 500. Yeah, yeah. It's like my standard day rate. And I don't know if I took you off guard, but you were like, okay. and then that was it.
No, I didn't know what to say.
But it was it was one of those meetings where, for me, it's a perfect meeting because I felt tested. I felt that I had to demonstrate stuff. I felt that I was working with really switched on guys. Because, you know what the problem is in my job? You know, working with a client who's, you know, kind of stubborn is hard, but it's more difficult working with a client who's too accepting of what's happening.
Yeah.
You know, like clients who don't check what you do and they don't test it, they don't make it work. You know, so you hand it over, then you get an email 3 months later saying it's not working. You know, that's such a hard way to do it. But I know with you and Cav, you're gonna absolutely test the crap out of it.
Yeah.
And that's really one of the one of the secrets to our success, I think.
Yeah,
I test it, you test it.
Yeah, I mean, I'm not going to lie. I was skeptical as anything. I was. I thought, it's just ridiculous. This guy can't do it. You know, I'm talking to you about how I compile odds, do this, do that. I've said it to other people. When I've sort of been placed with you, and I said, Chris, he's come. What fascinates me about when you meet Chris, he turns up with a notebook.
Yep. I've got a notebook here.
And he writes about three lines. So I'm talking to him about odds compiling. And in my head, I'm thinking this is a really complex subject. The guy knows nothing about betting. He hasn't got a clue what we're talking about here. And he writes one line of notes. And I left that meet. I thought, there's no fucking chance he can do this. He wrote about three lines down. I've done about 7 years developing this. And he's written about three lines on it. Your ability to retain what people say to you, I find absolutely amazing, because you do. You never forget anything. You never ring me up and go, what was it you wanted to do with that? You seem to grasp it all very. I mean, obviously, as we're talking to you, you must be wearing it in your head how you're going to do it from that initial point. Fantastic. So how have you found doing it? I mean, I don't know whether you've dealt with other bettors, or how have you found dealing with betting statistics and data and stuff like that?
Well, it lends itself very well to Excel. So I love it. I like working on projects where I have a sense of the context, and obviously I'm a sports fan. But in terms of the data, the size of the data sets, the kind of analysis that needs doing, it's just perfect for Excel. And if you get someone who you get on with and gets how it works, you know, it's great. We've got to talk about the follow-up meeting in Nottingham as well.
Yeah.
When you came up, this was brilliant. And so you came up to Nottingham, and I was like, why are they coming to Nottingham? they must be keen, you know, they must be interested. And because you stayed a night, can you remember?
Yes, in
the hotel. Yeah. And it was great. Yeah. It was like you packed me off with some homework to do overnight. Yeah. And then I was like, right, if I can nail this, I think they're going to be impressed. So and that night we went to Little Chef, because my girlfriend's listening. No, we went to Hooters that night, and that's when you and Cav were just, it was like a tennis match. You were just kicking off, and that's when I said you should have a podcast. It was great. It's a great night.
What's the birth of this podcast? I mean, he was talking shit about Man United. I was putting him right, and you sat there. I've said it before, and you sat there. I can picture it. You were like a tennis judge. We sort of sat in a three at a table, and you were at the side, and you were just watching us back and forth, upside thing, like that. And then about 10 minutes in, you guys should record this and do a podcast. It's just gold. He does talk, by the way.
I was thinking, no, they're going to stop now. No, they're going to stop now. No, they're definitely going to stop now. And like half an hour later, it still goes. Brilliant.
We did it all the way home.
I think a few people from other tables were kind of looking over and stuff. It was good. It's good stuff. But you packed me off with...
I missed Kev for that. I've replaced him with Suggsy now. Yeah. I just put him in his place.
You packed me off with my homework. Then I came out the next morning and opened it up for you. And you were like, what did you say? It was like, it wasn't quite right. It was like 90% there. And you were like, I knew it. I knew you were going to do it. And then it was something like the fixtures weren't sorted. Or I think my code sorted the fixtures into alphabetical order. And I was like, no, they're in alphabetical order. And you like ran over and you were like, shit. Oh, whoa. And it was a bit like a kid at Christmas, I got to say. I knew then that we were the I think, you know, I thought then we'd probably do some work together.
Yeah. I mean, I don't know how many things you've built for me now, but the one thing I'll say, everything that you've built for me, and that is now, you know, four coming up 5 years, everything that you've built for me, and it's been numerous things across Footland Racing, I use every one of them. And I use most of them every single day. You know, some of the analysis stuff, obviously, I only run at the end of the season and mid-season maybe. But the tools that we work on day-to-day stuff, I use them every day. They're just superb. They're absolutely flawless. And I mean that, guys. If anybody listening, you want Excel work done, this is your man. I'm telling you, he's absolutely brilliant. So you've done the 30 for 30. Obviously, over the time, I know you've not got a massive input, but the FTS guys interact with you. Some of them done the 30 for 30. You actually came out on our Christmas do and fucking embarrassed yourself, getting pissed.
Great night.
Didn't know how to behave himself. Having a go at Suggsy for supporting Boris all night.
Yes.
If you were giving anyone from what we've done, and obviously you know that people who bet on football racing listening to this, what would be your one bit of advice for them with Excel and data, and what would you say to them? Put you on the spot.
It's difficult to give one piece of advice. I mean,
give as many as you like.
But you've got to find a way that works for you. And you know, that's not necessarily Excel. I'll go back to the stuff you say, you know, consistency and discipline is most important. And, you know, in my job, you know, with the YouTube stuff, I've got like over 200 videos on YouTube now, you know, you've got to have the discipline, the consistency. That's the foundation. You know, Excel ain't going to do anything for you if you can't, you know, run the processes, you can't update the data. You can't, you know, keep the discipline to only make the recommended bets. So it comes in that context. But if you are interested in Excel, then you've got to get the training. You've got to get the right training. And the problem with Excel, well, one of the fundamental problems with Excel is it comes in a software package alongside Word and PowerPoint, undoubtedly there's Word programmers and PowerPoint programmers out there, but they're relatively simple, can I say, you know, relatively functional, straightforward piece of software to use. And then Excel comes as well. And over the years, that's built up into a sophisticated piece of modeling software. So it's like you've got, you know, a Ford Fiesta, some other standard car and a Ferrari, you know, or a Formula One car. You know, when people show me stuff, they, you know, every day people send me spreadsheets, and it feels a bit like you know, me trying to drive a Formula One car kind of thing. You know, you get a glimpse of the power, but it's not going to end. It's not going to end well. But my point is, you've got to achieve a shift in mindset to, you know, I say respect the medium. You know, it's always funny for me when I say I do spreadsheet development, people just laugh because they think spreadsheets are just a piece of piss, you know.
Yeah.
And that used to really piss me off, and I used to get in arguments about it. But now I just laugh as well. But I say you've got to respect the medium. So you've got to make the commitment to really learn it, you know, and that doesn't need to be a year's commitment. That can be a month's commitment. That could be a 30-day commitment, as we saw. So, yeah, it's you've got to build up. You've got to have the commitment and the discipline, all the stuff Ian talks about. But if you can do those things, Excel only comes after that, then you've got to achieve the change in mindset and commit to doing it.
Yeah, and your YouTube channel is?
Tiger Spreadsheet Solutions.
Tiger Spreadsheet Solutions. I go to YouTube, and you've got tons, like you said, 200 plus videos, as well as the 30.
Yeah. But if people want the, I'll recommend too. Obviously, there's the Excel VBA 30 for 30 Absolute Beginner course. If you want to get into VBA, and then there's a video series. Yeah, go on.
Is that easy to find on YouTube?
Yeah, if you type in Excel VBA Absolute Beginner 30. Maybe at the top of, just in the search bar at the top of YouTube, that will come up.
Bring you up, right? Okay, perfect. Chrissy, but I can't thank you enough, son. I genuinely can't.
It's been a pleasure.
You're one of these people, and again, I don't like saying it, that I could talk to all day long. Nothing like just get a beer and have a chat, because we come from vastly different worlds, but we get on very well. And I find you absolutely fascinating what you do. I do genuinely find it. I not just respect for it. I find it fascinating. I don't know how you don't get bored of it. You don't get up in the morning and think, oh, it's just another spreadsheet.
Yeah, I mean, I don't. You know, I really don't. I'm excited about it, but there's so much scope for. This will definitely make your viewers switch off, but there's so much scope for like artistic expression in Excel, you know, because it's all the technical stuff, making it accurate, but then you've got to present it all in a way that's compelling and that looks good. So there's these technical challenges, the artistic challenges, and then if you want to do it with consultancy, you've got the people challenge as well.
You haven't seen my new sheets I've built, have you? I've built some new sheets myself.
I want to see them.
I've put league colours, badges, everything on them. So I've done I've done a sheet for each league, for a particular model I'm working on, and I've done them all in the league colours.
Bundesliga. Well, there's one thing in Excel that you've done that I don't know how to do. I still don't know how to do, which is you've coloured the button on the Modric system. You've coloured it red and white, red and white checks, like Croatia. I still don't know how to do that.
Oh, well, there you go. After we're done here, if you give me a ring back, I'll talk you through these bits.
Yeah.
Guys, Chrissy, I can't thank you enough. Guys listening, genuinely, to get in this game, Excel is a massive help for analysing data, for your record keeping, for filtering. It's for me, it's absolutely essential. If you are struggling, do go to Chrissy's YouTube channel and watch it. And if you want any decent work done, something that the sort of stuff that I use, then Chrissy is your man. I'm not just saying this isn't a marketing exploit. I met him 5 years ago now, as I say, and we've done tons together now. I've bought his bloody house in Nottingham. Let's be honest about it. I've been paid for it. Chris.
Cheers, mate. I really enjoyed it.
Absolute legend. Obviously, we've got two or three things in the pipeline, so I will speak to you soon with those. But on behalf of FTS and the podcast, I can't thank you enough for coming on.
Brilliant, mate. See you soon.
See you later. Cheers. Bye.
So, Chrissy there, I hope you enjoyed listening to Chris. Fascinating insight into how he got into what he did. And just shows you what hard work, you know, and giving it a go can do. I think there's a line in Bounce, isn't there? The book Bounce that I recommended by Matthew Syed, saying that nobody got anywhere without hard work, discipline, and grinding it out. And I think, you know, Chrissy's a tribute to that in what he's done with Excel, and that is what you guys should be doing with your punting. You know, even these short few games we've had now, people up in arms, oh, football's gone. You know, it may be the home bias, but again, what have we had? 8, 17, 25 games, something like that. We'll get a bit more of an idea this week when some other leagues start to come back, Denmark, Poland, of exactly where things are at. But yeah, some strange old results, I'm not going to lie, for certain. But it'll be interesting to see. And we've got another low tonight. So, right, that's it from me. That's all I've got, is that Bochum game is it. I'll be back tomorrow. There's only one game, I think, on tomorrow. So we'll be back with some recipes and things like that. Right, have a lovely Wednesday. Thanks to Chrissy on my behalf. And I will speak to you all in the morning.